We are back with another masterclass here, episode number 366 with Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What is up? What's going on, guys? I got an awesome, awesome masterclass here with my buddy Ryan Pineda, who is just crushing it. Just such a young dude and somebody who runs multiple companies. That's actually one of the things we talk about is, you know, we hear so much about focus on the one thing, the pumpkin plan and the power of focus. And Ryan has just a unique ability and has been able at such a young age to successfully run multiple companies. You know, he got started in 2010 as a real estate agent while he was playing professional baseball. And what's crazy is that, you know, bouncing around in the minor leagues making $1,200 a month just wasn't cutting it. And so he started actually doing deals while he was playing professional baseball, which is no easy task, especially with the travel that they do. And, you know, 2015 with only $10,000 to his name, he really began his journey as a real estate investor. Fast forward 3 short years, and the dude's a multimillionaire, you know, and somebody who has purchased, you know, he has a fix and flip operation that does over 100 deals a year, does wholesaling, buy and hold portfolio. He does Airbnbs. I mean, he has an education company where now he's coaching people as well. So just a lot to unpack in this episode. I know you're going to get a lot out of it. So without further ado, let's dive right in. What is up, my friends? Alex Pardo here, back with another masterclass on the Flip Empire Show. And as most of the time, I'm very, very excited to have somebody on the show, because usually it's a relationship or it's a friend. And admittedly, Ryan is someone who I have come to learn about earlier this year through a mutual friend of ours, Ryan Robeson. And, you know, one of the things we're going to talk about here is the power of social media. Ryan is an extremely, as you just heard in the intro, extremely savvy, successful real estate investor. And so social media is how Ryan and I got connected. You know, I looked him up on Instagram. He happened to be doing a call with my buddy Ryan. And so excited to have you on, brother. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Good, man. Yeah, I'm excited about this. So, dude, you have been on a rampage. You have been crushing over the course of the last couple of years, it seems like, man. You and I were, it's funny, we were talking right before we started recording here. I want to bypass your journey. You know, most everybody probably knows professional baseball player. You weren't making very much money, if anything, when you were playing ball. And, you know, got started in 2010, but it seems like you really started gaining momentum around 2016, 2017. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
So why don't we pick it up from there? Because, you know, very rarely do I connect with people that have successful businesses across multiple verticals inside of real estate. You know, you got a successful brokerage, you do wholesales, over 100 fix and flips, you were telling me before we started recording, education business, you know, you got a big following on Instagram. How'd you even get to this point? Like, that's a loaded question, but why don't we pick this up from 2016 or so?
Yeah. So, in 2015, that was when I got started. And so, like you said, you know, I was playing baseball and all that, and ended up doing 5 flips my first year. And to be honest, I really didn't even understand how wholesaling worked. You know, I had bought from wholesalers, but I was just like, dude, I don't want to market and do all that crap. So, I really never did any marketing my first bunch of years, you know, strictly just bought from MLS and wholesalers. So, you know, going into 2016, you know, it became real. I was like, all right, I just did five flips. Like, I can really do this and make it a career. And so, you know, 2016 hits, I'm still playing baseball. And, you know, we ended up flipping 20 homes while I was still playing. Wow. And I was like, dude, this is a great, like, you know, I'm playing ball for half the year, flipping 20 homes the rest of the year. Like, I don't know anyone else doing this. And so the next year going into 2017, I planned to play baseball again. I was coming off one of my best seasons of my career. And something happened that I didn't expect. My real estate business kind of just exploded. And there's a couple of reasons for that, like you were asking. The very first reason would be I got my first private money lender. Okay. Up to that point, I was just strictly using hard money. And so it was difficult. Like, I was kind of limited on what I could do. So once I got someone to back me, you know, it made me like, all right, well, okay, I can find as many deals as I can. And then, you know, I'll figure out the rest later. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I ended up buying 50 homes that year in 2017. And I was still playing baseball. But, you know, halfway through the season, I was having my worst season of my career. I wasn't happy, mainly because I was so stressed out with like, oh man, I got to go play a game today. And then, you know, I got like all these deals closing and I'm negotiating. Like, it was too much. I finally had reached my point of like, all right, I got to make a decision and really go all in on this real estate thing. So I did. I ended up retiring in like July or August of that year. And that was pretty much when my business exploded, was, you know, retiring, just having that free time and, you know, really dedicating myself to going all in, which, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, can relate to when they finally quit their job and, you know, go all into real estate. And that's pretty much exactly what happened for me. I just had a kind of a different job.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, that it's, there's so much to unpack there, but it's interesting because most people listening to this cannot relate to being a professional athlete like you were, but people can relate to having a job and wanting to do something like real estate. But I think so many people struggle and like, you know, they work their 9 to 5 and then they have to sacrifice hours at night. And I think a lot of people are not able to figure out how to like juggle the two. You, I mean, I've heard the, so I played 1 year of college baseball at St. Thomas University, and that's nowhere near what I've heard, you know, minor league baseball players going through and professional athletes. How were you able to manage 20 deals while you were still playing ball?
Man, it honestly, I look back at it and I'm like, dude, you know, honestly, it wasn't that difficult for me. Like, you know, 20 deals, you break it down to a year, you know, you're buying basically two a month. Mm-hmm. And so, while I was there, managing two deals a month is not difficult. You know, you can do that by yourself. It was when I left that I had to first learn how to delegate things because literally I'm not there. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting my dad and I taught him what to do. I'm like, hey, you know, go meet the contractors, pay them, make sure these things get done and blah, blah, blah. And I was an agent. So I was still listing my properties and handling that side. I was handling purchases and all that. And so, I mean, like all that stuff can be done remotely as far as acquisitions and dispositions. And I think that's what you're seeing so much with wholesalers now is they're going virtual because they realize you can do it virtually.
Yes.
And I guess I realized that you could even flip virtually if you just do it right. And so, you know, it was a blessing for me because I had to learn to delegate early on, whereas most people don't learn it until, you know, way later. I was forced to do it. I didn't have a choice. It was either quit baseball or quit flipping or figure out how to do both.
Yeah. That's why I always say, Ryan, you know, in every adversity or in every challenge, there's a big lesson you're supposed to learn. And it's only if you don't learn it that you've essentially failed, right? And for you, like you said, you were forced to learn how to delegate because you were playing ball. You're on the road 6 months of the year. Like, you got to figure it out. The other thing I heard that we kind of touched on that I really want to dig deep into is there was two catalysts from what I'm hearing were the turning points in your life and in your business, particularly your business. Number one is you made the decision to let go of baseball to focus on real estate. Number two is that connection with a private lender. It seems like that's what really got you from 20 to, I think you said 50 deals that next year. Talk to me about how you built the relationship with that lender. Was it luck? Was it strategic? Like, why don't we start from the genesis of that relationship with the lender? Because it seems like that really catapulted your business.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you use the word genesis because, you know, it was really a biblical thing for us and a God thing. So I ended up meeting him in Bible study. Okay. You know, we had gone to the same church and, you know, we had known each other and whatever. And, you know, I knew he was well off. He was retired, you know, in his 40s. I knew he was worth millions of dollars and he had sold companies and different things. And so, you know, as just friends, I'd never really solicited him for money or anything. You know, he knew what I did. And it was probably, we were friends for at least a year before I ever said anything about like, hey, you know, if you ever want to get in on this, like I'm looking for more lenders. I don't know what you're doing with your money or how you're investing, but, you know, we can talk more about it. And so I kind of planted the seed and really nothing came of it, for a while. And, you know, as time had passed, a few months later, we became closer friends. We started playing basketball together and different things. And, he's like, tell me a little bit more about, you know, what it would look like. And so I just told him, I said, hey, look, this is what I pay for hard money. I don't mind paying you the same terms, but I need deferred interest. Like that's the only way I'm going to do this. Like if I can get no money out of pocket.
Yep.
And he was like, okay, all right, that's good to know. And once again, nothing of it, just kind of planting seeds. And then just one day he had called me. He's like, hey, let's go golf. And I said, all right. Didn't even like, you know, just, I thought we were going to go golf as friends. And so he says, look, you know, I want to start investing some money with you. I think the stock market's, you know, a little volatile and that's kind of what he had been doing with his money.
Okay.
And, he's like, so I want to start you off with, I think it was like 500,000. He's like, you know, like let's do that and see how it goes. I'm like, great. So we put his 500 to work, like first month, you know, we do it in like two or three deals. And, you know, those ended up being really good flips. They sold quick. Everything was nice and smooth and efficient. And after that, he's like, all right, like let's do a million. I'm like, okay, let's do a million, see what happens. So we do a million. And then it just kept slowly increasing. And then, you know, sure enough, he's got, you know, wealthy people have wealthy friends.
Of course,
and
yeah.
So, you know, he starts telling his friends, he's like, hey, you know, I got this guy. He's getting way better returns than the stock market and this and that and secured by real estate. And so he tells all his friends, you know, I meet his friends, I show him some of our projects and other things. And they're like, all right, you know, same deal. We'll try, you know, one project, two projects. And that's just really how it all came about. Like was over time, you know, he told his friends, they told their friends. And then I meet more people as I go along, you know?
Yeah. Ryan, I'm so glad you're sharing this story because I've shared on the podcast before, especially my experience has been somewhat similar to yours. When it comes to private lenders, brother, you just need one good one. You perform for them. You show them you're a professional. You know what you're doing. You take care of them. And it can open up the floodgates, you know, to other lenders. And it seems like that's exactly what happened with you. I want to backtrack for a second. For people listening that, you know, are kind of confused, deferred interest, meaning Ryan didn't have to make any interest payments every single month. His lender was paid on the back end with 100% of the principal, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Got it. You talked about something, you said planting seeds. Is that something you have done throughout your life, throughout your career with whether it's mentors, coaches, lenders, realtors? Do you find, because a lot of people in your position, you know, you said you met this guy at a Bible study and upon hearing that this guy's worth millions of dollars, a lot of people might default to, hey, let me go ask for something. Let me go ask for money.
Yeah.
And I think had you done that, I mean, again, you tell me if I'm wrong, had you done that, it probably wouldn't have gotten anywhere, but that wasn't your motive. That's not what you were, it doesn't sound like that's what you were trying to accomplish. You just planted seeds. You built a friendship until eventually that, you know, you had this opportunity. Talk a little bit about that versus what I think a lot of people might do in your position is, hey, let me go ask for something.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, yeah, it was never my intention. You know, we were just in Bible study together trying to learn about God. And, you know, we built a friendship based upon that. And so, you know, number one, when you're in that type of environment, you're dealing with a different type of person than your typical, you know, business guy who, you know, you don't know what their intentions are. So, you know, getting to, you know, develop our friendship and him to know my character, that takes time. You know, it doesn't happen off the bat. And, you know, you want somebody to invest millions of dollars with you. You don't just straight up ask them for millions of dollars. You gotta, you know, it's gotta just happen organically. And so I think a lot of people, they want to grow so quickly and have everything now. And, you know, really like the best things take time. Like nobody has built great businesses overnight. You know, as much as we want the get rich quick and, you know, I think wholesaling is the worst at that. You know, I think most people think with wholesaling, you can just build this giant business out of nowhere. It always takes time for whatever it is you're trying to do. And you got to just really, you know, like I said, I planted seeds, mainly because not that like I really needed his money or anything like that. It was just strictly like, yo, you know, you're getting whatever 5-6% in the stock market. Like as your friend, like we could do way better than that if you want, you know, no pressure. Like if you want to do it, we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that I want to kind of, this is where I want to pivot slightly. You know, you mentioned grow so quickly and somebody, I'm trying to put myself in somebody's shoes. And so I'm going to play devil's advocate for some, for a second. You know, you got started in 2015, really 2016, 17, you really things started to pick up for you. Here we are at the time. It's about to be, you know, this is, if somebody's listening to this when it gets published, we're heading into 2020 here. It seems like you have grown pretty quickly.
I know. I sound like a hypocrite.
No, I don't. You don't sound like a hypocrite. You just, you sound like somebody who's just been really, really focused and dialed in. I mean, obviously you have talent, you know, there's a lot of characteristics you carry that, you know, led you to this point. It wasn't luck, you know, so you don't sound hypocritical at all, but for somebody listening, like, man, 3-4 short years and you have all these successful businesses. Talk a little bit about that, because I don't want, one of the things I've learned, Ryan, is not to look at somebody else and compare their journey to mine. I think we're all on our own unique paths. God has given us with unique abilities. And so I think, you know, I think who said the quote, comparison is the thief of joy. And so what I'm trying to do is I don't want somebody to listen to this and say, look at Ryan. He started in 2015, 16. He's got a brokerage, 100 fix and flips a year, wholesales, Airbnb, all this stuff, right? So can you kind of speak directly to that and maybe why your journey was kind of different than a lot of other people out there?
Yeah. And I think the author of that quote was Craig Rochelle. That's where I've heard it from. If anyone hasn't heard his podcast, it's great for leadership and everything.
Check it out.
Yeah. I would say number one, don't compare yourself to other people. I mean, the first and foremost, like we're all on our own journey. We're all got different talents and skill sets and other things. Like, you know, 99% of people cannot do what I do with managing multiple businesses. Like that's just the reality of it. And it takes a lot of, I guess, empathy and emotional capacity to handle so many different people and their livelihoods when, you know, they depend on you. So, I don't want you guys to look at my business and say, oh man, like I can do that in, you know, 3-4 years. Like, you know, that's my goal. Like, don't make that your goal. Make your goal, like whatever it is that, you know, you feel called to do and your talents are. So, I would just say, you know, for us, I've just kind of just been, you know, going with the flow. Like, I cannot tell you that I've been, you know, I've had this planned, you know, I didn't have it planned to go start a brokerage or to do education. Like, it just kind of happened. And, you know, I felt compelled to do it. And I just did it. You know, at the end of the day, like, all of these endeavors are always tests of faith. And I didn't know how they were going to work out. You know, when I wrote my book, like I was scared. Like I was like, dude, I don't know if this book is going to sell and if I'm going to waste all this time or anything. But you know what? I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write it because I feel compelled to do it and we'll see what happens. And, you know, it's been crazy, you know, the things that it's brought. And, you know, if I would have just let fear take in and not did it because of all these doubts, then who knows where I would be. And it's the same with all these other businesses. Like, you know, the brokerage, we started with literally just me and my partner. I was like, hey, just be the broker and we'll see what happens. Like, there's no guarantee this is going to actually work out. And, you know, it's grown like crazy. And I think it just all comes back to, you know, living by faith that, hey, you know what? If you feel compelled to do something, there's always going to be fear. There's always going to be doubt, but you've got to get through that and just do it. And it may be successful, it may not be, but you know, you'll never know until you actually do it.
Yeah. For you, Ryan, and maybe this is, you know, this is, some people might think this is an odd question to ask. For me, it's not, because obviously, you know, you're a man of God and I can tell faith is important to you. Have you always operated by the gut feeling, the quote unquote tap on the shoulder from God? Like, how do you assess and you know, when God plants seeds in our lives, how do you assess, hey, this is what God wants me to do? Versus here's a shiny object, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
I genuinely want to know the answer to that question from your perspective.
Yeah. And let me tell you, man, that is a tough question that we wrestle with in Bible study and other things all the time. And so really I tell people there's three ways. Well, you know, there's a couple of ways to know that it's from God. All right. Number one, does it line up with the Bible? Okay. That's the very first thing I'll ask myself. So it's like, all right, I've got this opportunity in front of me. Okay. This guy wants to open a strip club. Okay. That doesn't line up biblically. Like I already know that's not an opportunity from God. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's like the very first like threshold. Then number two, I go and pray about it. And it's like, all right, is God going to reveal something through prayer? Like, is he going to show me a sign that like, yo, this is right? And typically that's what happens is I will get a sign from somebody else or just something will happen where it's confirmation of what I'm doing. And that gives me confidence.
Right. And you getting into real estate, right? I think I heard somewhere that you had asked when you were playing ball, you asked about, hey, what am I supposed to do with my life? And you saw something about a real estate seminar, right?
Yeah. And that, you know, back in before 2015, I knew my baseball career wasn't going to go where I wanted. And I prayed about it. And I said, God, like, what do you want me to do? Like, I literally don't even have any other passions or skills other than baseball. That's just what I've done my whole life.
Yeah.
And, he showed me that thing and I, you know, went down this rabbit hole and looked into it. And then, you know, on the plane ride home, I just sat next to a guy who was like, yo, I want you to know that God kind of, you know, called me to talk to you about this, but like I've, you know, done hundreds of real estate transactions. I think you're on the right path. I was like, holy crap. And I can't, like, that has happened in my life many times. Like I can't even tell you how many times this happened. And so obviously the power of prayer, that's my second way of like, all right, should I do this? Is it from God or not? And the last way is just from the people in my life who I know are walking with God. And so I will run it by them. It's like, all right, this passed the first test. All right. It's biblical. It's good. All right. Second test. I prayed about it. You know, I feel good about it. Everything like that. Third test. Let me go talk to like my private lender who, you know, I trust. He's a mentor and other things. I will run by any kind of business decision because this guy's a very savvy businessman and, you know, high integrity, all that stuff. And I'll say, hey, what do you think about this? And he'll bring things to my attention where, you know, maybe I missed him. He'll be like, well, what do you think is going to happen to your family? Like, if you do that, like how much time is it going to take away? You know, is it going to impact, you know, this or this or this? Like, are you going to be able to, you know, do the things that you really want to do with your family? Right. You know, you got a son now. And so that's how I really kind of go through that progression of, hey, is this from God or is this me like looking at a shiny object?
I love that. You know? Absolutely love that, man. And I'm not going to apologize for asking that question because that answer may or may not serve people listening to this, but for me, it's very telling, very revealing as to who you are as a man and as a person. So I really appreciate your perspective on that because oftentimes I struggle with that. You know, I'm presented with an opportunity and I sit back and I say, okay, did God purposely place this in my life? Or is this a shiny object? And I kind of tussle with the two sometimes. And so really appreciate that. Let me ask you this, dude, do you think you were just born with the talent, the God-given ability to be an entrepreneur? Because like you said, when you were playing ball, I mean, you had never started a business before, right? And here you are, 2015, you got into this and fast forward four short years later and look where you're at now. I mean, is this something that you think you just have always had the chops for? Or did you learn and acquire this skill, you know, by just, was
you
it
know,
raw
I think,
you had the talent? That's what I'm asking.
I do believe it's a talent thing. I mean, I look at, obviously I was very influenced by sports, right? And sports is strictly like you're given God-given talent or you're not, you know, you're athletic or you're not. Like there's nothing you can do about it. And I think God did give me talents with, you know, leading people with, you know, being able to like get over the fear of entrepreneurship, which is I think the biggest struggle for most people. You know, it's the fear of like, oh man, like I don't know if I can rely on myself and leave this paycheck. Like, you know, I literally never had that fear. I was just like, dude, I've never had a real job. Like that fear doesn't exist to me. And I think, you know, God just, he gave me the talent to do it. And that's why I say, I don't think, I tell people all the time, anyone can get into real estate. Anyone can do this business. Can you lead a company and flip 100 homes and manage all these people? I mean, maybe you might have the talent to do it. But I'm going to show you the cost of it and what it entails. And, you know, you'll have to decide for yourself if you have the talent and, you know, emotional intelligence, the, you know, regular intelligence to be able to handle all that.
Yep. Yep. What's really impressive to me, brother, is from, and again, man, you and I admittedly don't know each other that well, but from what I see from the outside through social media, and I know that sometimes that's kind of skewed, but it seems like you're a family man. Like, you don't seem to be, it's much more impressive to me that you have successful businesses, and it seems like you have, I'm cautious to use the work-life balance phrase because, you know, I think that's misleading at times, but it seems like you're not sacrificing your personal life, your family, in the pursuit of money and success and just building a business. It seems like you got those two, just well balanced. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, I think our world today is so distracted, right? We're so distracted by our phones, and I'm guilty of that too.
We're all guilty.
My wife gets on me all the time. And, we're distracted, and like, we kind of have this, I would say, pride in being busy. And it's like, oh man, I'm so busy and this and that. Hmm. And it's like, dude, for me, I try as hard as possible not to be busy. And I get a crack out of it. Like Nick, my business partner, and my wife will tell you, like, whenever I get DMs on social media and stuff, they're always like, hey man, I know you're super busy and this and that. I'm like, no, I'm actually really not. Like, if you want to talk, like, we could talk today. And, I had put a post about that like the other day. I'm like, hey, anybody who ever wants to meet me, usually they're going to meet me within the next day. Like, I'll never set an appointment with somebody like 2-3 weeks down the road, because I don't want to fill up my schedule with all this bull crap and meetings and whatever. It's like, and then too, it's also a filter. It's like, hey, okay, you want to meet? How serious are you? Can you make it happen today?
Good point.
You know? And that's just kind of how I've always lived my life, like day to day. I'm never trying to, jam packed all this crap. And so, as far as balance goes, I think it really just comes back down to priorities and what is it like, what is it for you? Mm-hmm. You know, for me, money was never a priority. And I know a lot of people say, well, bull crap, like, you get in this business. I'm like, no, I mean, like, if you just even look at my life before all this business stuff, like with baseball, I was playing for $1,200 a month. Like, I knew I wasn't going to get to the big leagues like for years. Like, I was literally just playing because I loved playing and it was fun.
Love the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And, my wife, she came from, poor background and, all that stuff. Like, we never needed like nice stuff. We were totally happy living in an apartment, me playing baseball. She was traveling with me. Like, we were cool. And I can tell you, like, we're just as happy now as we were 5-6 years ago when we had no money. And so I think money has never changed like my priorities and who I am. It's definitely allowed me to do a lot of things, which are great. No doubt. But, just with like when I get a new business idea and opportunity, I do count the costs and I say, well, there's always a trade-off for everything you do. And so it's like, all right, am I going to trade this hour of the day so that I can work on this project? Hey, I know this new business is going to take, a month to really build out. Like, am I willing to sacrifice that or not? And those are the decisions I've got to make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause man, like you kind of just touched on it. When you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. You know what I mean? Yep. There's only 24 in a day. How important do you have a certain routine that has empowered you, to manage your, your family life? You're a husband, you're a father, you're an entrepreneur, you're a partner. Do you have certain routines that you've put in place that you think have really helped you get to where you are right now? Or no, has it just kind of been like,
No, I love that you asked that question because I'm so big on routine. And I actually did a whole message at my church about this because it's so important for everyone, whether you're a businessman or not. And like, routine as an athlete obviously is like gold. Like, you will not make it as an athlete if you do not have a routine, because it's so difficult to be consistent day to day in sports. Yeah. The only way you do that is by getting a routine. You eat at the same time, you work out at the same time, you get to the field, game time's at 7, you do the same amount of batting practice and, all that stuff. So that's what I was trained on. And so when I got out of it, I said, well, okay, what's a routine look like for a businessman? And that's literally where most businessmen fail, is they have none. They're like, all right, well, I'll wake up at, whenever I wake up, or, I'll make a commitment. I'll wake up at 6. And it's like, from there, they don't know what to do. Yeah. And there's no schedule or routine. So like, for me, and people can copy this or whatever, but this is how I maintain balance and productivity and efficiency. So every morning I'll wake up at 5:30, and I recently switched this. So this is a new thing I'm trying, but I'll do cardio for 30 minutes. So I bought an elliptical. I'm just doing cardio for 30 minutes. You know, I'll take a shower, eat some breakfast, all that stuff. Then from there, I spend an hour reading my Bible, praying, journaling, memorizing Bible verses, just kind of getting my mind right. And I do that for an hour every morning. So that leads me to about 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, I go to the gym, spend an hour at the gym, get it in. And everyone on Instagram, I mean, I post this stuff. They can see the consistency. And then I get back from the gym. It's like 9 o'clock, have another meal, get showered up, get ready, head to the office. I'm there around 10 to 11. It just varies. And then from the office, I'm here until, you know, I feel like I'm ready to go home. But the one rule is I will never stay past five. I've set that boundary like, hey, no matter how much work I've got or whoever wants to meet, like I'm not staying past five. And, you know, at five, I'm going to be home and the rest of that time is spent with family. And so we do that. I mean, I just literally do that every weekday. And you know, for me, that's like, all right, well, I'm at the office like 6 hours a day. Right.
Yeah.
And I thought like, man, like I'm pretty good. And we just had our first son, you know,
congratulations.
Year. Thank you. Thank you.
What a blessing.
And yeah, it's amazing. And my wife, you know, he was a premature baby. He was 2 months premature and, you know, was in the NICU for 2 months. And so that was a tough, you know, thing on my wife. And when he finally got home, like, right, he's got a lot of, you know, needs and doctor's appointments and all this stuff. And, you know, my wife was feeling like, man, like I need help. I need you more. And, you know, all this stuff. And so I made the decision, to not go into work on Wednesdays. And, you know, to me, I'm like looking at it from one perspective of like, dude, I only work 30 hours a week. That's way less than every other entrepreneur I know. Yeah. And, but on one hand, I got my family saying, hey, like I need you here. You know, are you willing to sacrifice that 6 hours? That 6 hours could make you a lot of money, right?
Yeah,
but right. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to take Wednesdays off and I'm not even going to go into the office or anything. And so I decided to do that earlier in the year. And now, I mean, things, it's like nothing's like ever changed. I mean, my guys, they're doing what they got to do. So I only go in Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So I'm like in the office 20 to 25 hours a week.
Amazing.
We don't work on weekends. And that's why it looks like what it does, because I literally just stick hard and fat. Like there's just no negotiation. It's like, all right, every morning I'm doing this, you know, I'm not staying past this time.
Yeah.
I'm not coming in the office to meet you on Wednesday. I don't care who you are. And that's just kind of what it is.
Dude. So you and I have so much in common that I don't even think you're aware of that. I'm just learning now. So our first daughter, Ariana, we spent 4 days in the NICU, which is nothing compared to the 2 months you spent. But I remember that day one, the first night she was born, we were in the NICU 3, which for anybody that has never experienced or been there, it's scary. You know, when you see babies in these little ovens and it's, I mean, just, I get chills like thinking about it. And when I heard you say that, I remember that night that I spent, and my wife had surgery, so she was kind of out of it. And I was in there with my family. And I remember praying to God saying, I'm always going to be here for this little girl. And part of that is I would never leave past 4:30, 5 o'clock, like 5 o'clock, absolute latest. Like I'm always home for dinner to spend time with them. And I always said, I'm never going to put money and business or anything else over them. And so I think, you know, to your point, Ryan, that just goes down to priorities, man. Like, what are your priorities? I've always said, you know, if you show me somebody's bank account and or calendar, I can pretty much tell you what they're prioritize, you know? Yeah. And so for people listening, you know, use this as an opportunity to kind of do an inventory check. Like, you know, do you say family's most important, but yet you tell yourself a lie that you need to work, you know, 15, 16 hour days for them, when what they probably need is you, not the money that you're going to bring in from those extra 4 or 5 hours. And I think the other lesson in your story, Ryan, is that, you know, it's all about efficiency and productivity. Like if you give somebody 8 hours, it doesn't mean you can't be even more productive in less time. In fact, I find that you will be more productive because you know you have a finite window to get stuff done. And you're just more efficient and focused is what I have found. That's been my experience.
Yeah. And it's funny you brought that up, man. We are thinking on the same lines because I was literally going to say that, like, even though I'm working less hours, Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed. I'm just as efficient as before. Like, you know, these people who work, you know, the 15, 16 hour days, like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say there's no time and place for that. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, you need to be just like me and work 20 hours a week because you're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for these guys who are putting in the 15 to 16 hours, in my mind, there's just no way you can work that efficiently for that long of amount of time. You're going to get burnt out. Like, you most likely can do the same thing in half that time. You know, you're just not working efficiently if you're really working that hard.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting, Ryan, and I don't knock it because I have so much respect for the Gary V's of the world and you know, Grant Cardone and all these guys that we hear, we're in an age now where I think the hustle and the grind is so glorified. And like, if that's what you want to do, like, kudos. That's just never been the vision I have for my business and for my life. And I see so many people out there trying to mimic that. And they've, maybe you feel different, but I feel like people believe this story that you have to hustle and grind and you have to put in so many hours in order to succeed. And what I found is that that's just not true. Like, I'm not knocking it. If you want to do that, but do it for the right reasons, because that's what you truly want. Not because, you know, from the optics and what you see other people succeeding do. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier about busyness. Like, our society is so addicted to busyness and distractions and all that. And I mean, that just goes back to it. It's like, all right, well, you know, what's distracting you? Well, it's like, all right, the pursuit of money. I mean, that's literally the only reason why you would work 15 to 16 hours. Like, it's to make more money. Yeah. And so you have to just decide, like, well, what is the most important thing to me? Like, yeah, personally, if I did work like a normal 40 hour work week, I would be even crazier than what I am now. Like, it would be, I don't even know what I would do with that time, but I'd be like, all right, well, I got these extra hours. Like, let's create and do something you know, big. But, you know, for me, that's not the priority. And so, I mean, it really just comes back to like what you talked about, figuring out like, really, what are your priorities? And if you do have a family and you are putting in those 16 hour days, like, you know, look, everyone's at a different spot in their life. Like, if you are doing that, make sure there's an end, like an end inside. It's like, look, I'm strictly just doing this for the next 3 months to really get us back on track. Cause you know, we're behind and you know, after that, you know, I'm going to be back and we're going to be, you know, doing what we got to do.
Yeah.
So, but just don't make it a lifestyle.
I'm so glad you said that, because I certainly don't want it to come across. And look, there's seasons in our lives where we have to go and we have to put our foot on the gas. So I'm certainly not saying, if you're in that point in your life, I'm certainly not saying don't sacrifice and do what you need to do. But to your point, make sure there you see the light at the end of the tunnel. That's just not like what your life is going to look like. Because oftentimes, man, I've seen so many people that are so successful in their bank account, but yet their marriage is failing. They don't really know their kids. I think it was who's this dude? Bill Gates. I think I heard that he wrote his book so that his kids can know who he was. No, not Bill Gates. I'm drawing a blank now, man. Who's the guy that passed away? I should know this.
It's at
the
tip of my tongue.
Steve Jobs. Yeah. Sorry, man. I don't know how I forgot that. I heard Steve Jobs wrote his book so that his kids could know who he was. Like, that breaks my heart, man. Like, that's heartbreaking. And so, you know, just do things for the right reasons. I can't believe I forgot that guy's name.
And that's one thing I'll say about that too is, and this is something that goes through my mind, is like, all right, how big do I want to grow my company, right? Like, okay, you know, do I want to like take it to the level of like these hedge funds and go nationwide and, you know, go 1,000 homes or whatever? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought about that question and I'm like, do I have the talent to do it? Yeah. Like, if I wanted to put my mind to it, I believe I could do it. But then I think about it and I go, well, okay, you know, like these publicly traded companies, CEOs have responsibilities to their shareholders and this and that. Like, they're expected to put in these 15 hour days.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of conflicts with my priorities. And so it's like, all right, you know, do I ever want to be this big publicly traded company or like ever have that type of, you know, impact? And it's like, probably not. I just don't see how it could ever be possible with my other beliefs.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. Absolutely love it. As we start to kind of wind down the show here, I want to end in talking about social media. It appears you've done a really, really good job of building an audience. You're constantly providing value. What impact would you say social media has had on your success? Is it a small percentage of it? Do you attribute a lot of it to it? Like, where do you land on social? And then we can get into like some of the specifics and how people are able to really tap into some of these platforms we have now.
Yeah, I mean, I would honestly attribute it to the majority of my success. Wow. And what I'll say is, I was not a social media person. Like, if you go back on my profile a few years ago, I literally didn't post anything. I wanted to be private and, you know, I didn't want people in my business. And so that's kind of how I handled my life. And then one time I had a mentor tell me, he's like, bro, you know, you gotta be active on social media. Like, it's gonna, you know, bring you deals. It's gonna make you money and all these things. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'll give it a try. And sure enough, wholesalers started realizing, you know, who I was. And so they would bring me deals. And I'm like, wow, I wouldn't have got that deal if he didn't know who I was. And yeah. So like, that was the first light switch. Like, okay, this is working. Start doing it more. Oh man, like, now realtors are giving me deals. Now, you know, I'm meeting more wholesalers. This is crazy. Then as my business grows, like, you know, I start meeting new people who are eventually going to work for me. I'm like, man, this guy's talented. Like, yeah. You know, all this stuff. Like, so I don't think there's like any type of value I could even put on it, because I've gotten so many deals from social yeah. media, at least 100 deals from social media. I've gotten employees who have gotten me deals. I've gotten private money because I'm so active on there. Like, at the end of the day too, part of the book is obviously it helps people and does all that, but it also builds social proof and credibility for what I do. So raising money is so much easier for me now. Like, we could buy as many properties as we want, honestly, with how much money we're able to raise now because of social media. Like, if I'm not known, these people are not investing with me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So somebody listening to this, who's not active, who was maybe in your shoes 3-4 years ago, where weren't posting a lot and you weren't adding value. What's your advice for them? Like, are you strategic with the content you put out, or does it just come to you naturally and you're like, hey, I'm doing this, I'm going to share this. Like, how much in advance do you think through what you're going to put out there? And then what advice do you have for people who are just, again, not as active on social, but realize there's a place for it and there's a lot of value that they can share and receive by just being more involved on social media?
Yeah. So there's a lot of points to that. You know, number one, like, at our brokerage, that's really what we hammer on our agents is like, hey, you guys got to be active on social media. Like, you know, we got this real world real estate, and then there's digital real estate, and the digital real estate is pretty much free. It's just a matter of what you're going to put out there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for me, when I'm training them, I tell them, you know, number one, just get over the fear of, like, you know, thinking that you're stupid, because you are going to look stupid. I tell them straight up, I'm like, your video is going to suck. Your content's going to suck. My content, I look back, you know, a bunch of years ago, and it sucked. And that's just what it is. And so get over that, but just start making a habit of making videos and posting every single day. And I also tell them too, like, everyone's going to have their niche on social media. And so, yeah, my whole niche is like, I'll grab my phone and I'll just start talking about education and value and things I can, you know, basically me as a teacher. But that doesn't have to be, you know, I see some of the worst people on social media, like on YouTube and stuff, just walking through houses and like, they're not funny or anything. And they get thousands of views and like, they get business. And I'm like, you literally just got to find your niche. And you could even write articles. You can, you know, there's so many things you can niche down to. And so, you know, we kind of walk through that with them and, you know, say, hey, look, this is what you got to do. And once they buy in, they realize like, oh man, like, I got a couple of replies yesterday for my story. They want to see homes. And I'm like, yeah, that person would have never messaged you if you just didn't post it. Yeah. And so there's a lot of ways to provide value, but also entertainment. I mean, that's the other half of the coin is like, you know, you got to be somewhat entertaining for these people to reach out to you. So that's kind of what we preach to our agents. What I would say for like new people is, like I said, number one, don't, you know, get over the fear. You are going to suck. That's just what it is. Number two, once you can figure out your niche, really double down on that as far as like what your content's going to be based on. And you won't know your niche until you try a bunch of stuff. So try new things, you know, try the selfie ghetto camera thing that I used to do. Try a professional video where it's got nice editing, music and title. Like, I didn't start doing that for a long time. Like, I was just doing the raw footage. you know, try posting articles. And if you're a good writer, you know, you can create a good content doing that. But try new things. There's a lot of stuff you can do, but just buy into the fact that this world is going to just continue to grow more in social media space. Like
100% agree.
Russell Brunson, I think he said it. He goes, it's sad, but like people really think that social media is like the real reality versus like actual real life. Like if they don't see you doing good on social media or out there, they're like, dude, that guy's not doing anything. He's a bum.
Yeah. that's kind of crazy though, right? I think he's 100% right, but it's insane. And I think to double down on what you're saying, and we'll start to kind of wrap this up here is, you know, for those of you listening, figure out your voice. And what I mean by that, are you good on camera? You know, or do you have, is a podcast, you know, do you have a voice? Do you prefer to speak your thoughts? You know, are you a good writer? Like me, if I had to write, I'm a decent writer, but it would just take me forever. I prefer to hop behind a mic and share my thoughts and communicate this way. But some people don't have that talent. Some people are better on camera. Like I've seen you, you're really, really good on camera. There's people that, man, they're just kind of awkward. But I think the point is, if you're consistent and if you're providing value, you said it yourself, you might not be entertaining, but it's going to bring you opportunities. And just know that you're helping people. I think the other side of it is just going into something with the mentality that you're going to give and share and don't be tied to the outcome per se. And I think naturally the byproduct of opportunity is going to come your way. But I think if you go there with the intent that, hey, I want to monetize this, you probably will, but I don't know if it's going to be as effective. Maybe you have a different take on that. But I think for me, when I launched this podcast, I'll share me as a quick example. My intent was never to monetize the podcast. It was, man, people would reach out to me and ask me questions. And I said, I wish I had that recorded because I think it could help everybody else. And so I said, I'm just going to do this. And there's a cost to produce the show. And I've had so many opportunities come my way as a result of it. So for me, having that mentality has kind of always served me. And I wonder if you kind of agree that if people are going to jump into being more active on social, that mindset would serve them, or the opposite. If you think, hey man, no, go into it with a specific outcome that you want and you'll get it.
Yeah. You know, I think you can look at it both ways. You know, you started your podcast cause you know, like you just said, it was questions that you're always getting asked and you thought it'd make for great content. That was the same reason I wrote my book. Was literally, I get asked all the time, hey, how do I start flipping houses? And I was like, dude, I'm tired of answering this question. Like I'm just going to literally make the book so I never have to answer it again. And I haven't since. And so it's been the best thing ever.
I love it.
And so it wasn't strictly like, hey, I'm going to make all this money off the book. Like the book makes so little compared to the rest of the stuff we do. But anyways, as far as like how you want to gear your content and your reason for doing it, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, I'm going to do this so I can make money and build my business. Yes. Like at the end of the day, if you know that going into it, then you need to decide, well, okay, who's my target client? Okay. Mm-hmm. And for realtors, you know, I tell them like, all right, you know, your target client is going to be somebody who's like you. People like working with people who they're like. So it's like, if I was a realtor, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to target all the baseball players and I'm going to, you know, gear content towards them and all the other athletes and, you know, things that I like. And so, you know, that's how I would like kind of take that approach with them. You know, for me right now in my life, you know, I gear my content towards pretty much business to business. Like I don't have any like retail people who are my clients. Like I'm strictly just dealing with professionals. Like I want realtors to know me. I want wholesalers to know me. I want to teach people who want to get into the business and be a business professional. So my content is geared towards them. You cannot please everyone. Okay. You have to go niche and you have to figure out who your avatar is, who's the person that, you know, you want to be your client and work with.
Yeah, I get it. And you have a pretty healthy mix of personal versus business content that you put out there, right? I think on your socials, I've seen a lot of your family stuff on there. And I tend to like that, but I've also heard the flip side where, hey man, just keep it like develop a brand on Instagram and just keep it straight, whatever your niche is. But it seems like you've kind of got a different direction.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to who's my client, right? My client is somebody who's family oriented, but, you know, values business and all that. And so anytime anyone, you know, buys my course or wants to do some education stuff and, you know, we're actually getting ready to launch our first ever coaching program here soon. I already know that anytime I've held an event or done something like that, they're already like-minded like me. They know that they don't want those 18-hour days. Whereas, you know, the Gary Vee guys, they're going to be like, yeah, I want that. I want that. I want the hustle. And so I think just really being genuine with who you are, it makes life so much easier. Because once again, you're working with people who are like you. You're going to relate better, and you're not going to have to like be chasing these people, you know, because they want to do business with you.
That's right. Absolutely love it, Ryan. Hey, man, this has been a true pleasure getting to know you better, having you on the show. I really appreciate your insight and perspective on things. So definitely want to acknowledge you for that. How do people reach out to you? I mean, you're pretty easy to find on social, but where are some of the best places to connect with you for those listening that just want to reach out and connect?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, social media is the best. On Instagram, you can follow me at All Star Investor. Facebook, just search my name, Ryan Pineda, and you'll find me. As far as like everything else we got going on in business, if you go to futureflipper.com, you'll see kind of all the education stuff and meetups and events and different things we're doing. But yeah, those would be the easiest ways to get a hold of me for sure.
Got it. Very cool, my man. So last question, and then we'll get you out of here. This is something I typically ask guests. You can't be more than 30, 31, right? I'm guessing.
I just turned 30 this year.
30. All right. Yes. So rewind the clock 10 years. What's the one piece of advice you'd share with a 20-year-old Ryan Pineda, knowing what you know now? And it doesn't even have to be business. It could be life, just anything. If you had to kind of boil it down to one piece of advice you wish you knew at 20, what would that be?
Oh man. I would say don't take baseball so seriously. I mean, up to that point, you know, it was my life, and that was like literally everything was geared towards baseball. I was like, all right, like I was that guy who was like, hey, I'll go practice for freaking 15 hours to make this a reality and happen. And you know, I didn't have a family or anything, you know, I'm 20 years old, but at the same time, I neglected other things in my life, like my faith, like, you know, my family and different things, like to pursue that baseball thing. And, you know, I was a hot shot and whatever, and I was about to get drafted. So cocky me would not have listened. I'd have been like, oh man, like I'm about to play in the big leagues. I don't need to listen to you. So I would just say like, you know, that would be to me personally. I know that doesn't really apply to most people. But that's like me personally, but also for something more general for other people, talking to 20-year-old me, I would say, hey, like start looking into this real estate thing sooner. Like, you know, I got licensed when I was 20. But I didn't know anything about investing. I never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I never read all of these books that teach you financial literacy and, you know, how to really build wealth. Like I was just like, dude, I'm getting the big leagues and that's how I'm building wealth. Like there's no other way around it. And I think you read those books when you're 20, they're going to definitely shape how you do things. And like, I mean, I really believe like with social media now, whereas 10 years ago, Instagram didn't even exist, right? You can follow guys like me or you or whoever else and like be a 20-year-old kid and be like, oh man, that's how he does it. Like it's right there. I can literally go message him and ask him straight up how he does it. I didn't have that ability. And so, you know, I would have just read more books. I would have did all that stuff. So for the 20-year-old kid today, go freaking message every single guy like me or like you and whoever else and go like figure out how do I like add value to this guy so that he can tell me what he's doing. Like that's what I would do.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text Empire to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.